Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
The other day, you may remember, I spoke to Men's Sheds. And more than 80% of the country's men's sheds have had their fundraising affected, of course, by COVID-19, placing their future at risk. And we spoke to Val, and I'll be honest with you, when we do interviews on the show, you know, on a lot of occasions, you know, obviously we have to, you know, give you as much information in 2 hours as we can about different things going on in the country, and particularly around this particular time, people want information, they want to know what's going on. And, you know, some interviews I'm really excited about, and other interviews I'm going, I am equally kind of some level excited about it, but I'm kind of saying, oh, okay, yeah. And I don't have as much information. I didn't know as much, but I did know an awful lot about men's sheds and how important they were to people until I spoke to Val Brown. And Val Brown brought me, and nearly, well, almost in the first 9 years, brought me to tears, because I understand now how important men's sheds and men's organisations are. And particularly, I suppose, today, because the information today from the UN is that we are facing a mental health crisis, and they're calling on governments of the world to focus on the mental health of people during this time when people are locked down. And that goes for men and women. Research in the paper the other day suggested that women suffer more from mental health problems due to lockdown than men. But I don't believe that research. I think the difference is that men don't talk about it. I think men equally, if not more sometimes, suffer from mental health problems, because I think women have their circle of friends. Men tend to be a little bit, I suppose, they don't want to talk to other men about it, because I suppose it's not cool, it's not macho, and we need to get rid of that idea that you can't talk to people. We need to talk to people. But I think it's important that we understand more about what Men's Sheds does. So I've decided to invite, because I wanted to give it more time, because I kind of felt I rushed him off the air the other day, Val Brown to join me again, and Johnny Hanafy, who are both members of Men's Sheds and are part of the organisation. Good afternoon, lads.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Val, just getting back to you, everybody was taken by your story of your wife and how she passed away recently, Mary, and what it meant to you and how your life changed after that and how you literally went downhill. And I suppose loads of people were texting us in afterwards asking us, how you, firstly, how you are now. How are you feeling now?
Oh, I feel great.
Do you? Okay.
Yes, a new lease of life since I joined the men's sheds.
Right, okay. And to remind us again, how long were you married?
I was married for over 30 years.
All right. And we're going to dedicate the day today to her, you know, because I think, you know, she must have been a wonderful person if she had that kind of effect on you after she passed away. Because obviously when she passed away, you missed her greatly, because she was, you were a unit. She was part of your life.
We went everywhere together.
Yeah. And what sort of things did you do? Did you go dancing, or did you go to the movies, or what did you do?
We weren't very good dancers, but we went dancing and we went to shopping and everything. Every day, every morning, I used to bring her uptown shopping 6 days a week. And you know what I mean? Anywhere she ever wanted to go, I brought her. She was always there for me, so she was.
And describe her to us, because we all now know Mary. We heard her talk. We heard you talking about her so beautifully on the air today, or the other day. And describe her. If somebody said to you, what was Mary like? What sort of person was she?
Very quiet person, easygoing. Family always came first.
Yeah.
And me, always running and racing for the whole lot of us.
Yeah.
His two daughters and sons. She done everything for us.
So she
and she used to love walking the dogs. We have three huskies and she walked them every day.
Right.
Three of them.
And you mentioned the other night too that you always remember she'd bring you in your cup of tea.
Oh yes, 9 o'clock at 9 o'clock in the evening. I'd be sitting in here watching television. She'd be in there and she said, "You want a cup of tea?"
Yeah.
And you know, now that door will never open again.
I'm sorry to hear. And I know, Val, that it really upset you. So to remind people who didn't hear you the other day, after she passed away, for a while you were going downtown, but a lot of people were talking about her, and that was kind of, it was very hard for you to deal with. So you became a little bit reclusive, I suppose.
Yeah, I couldn't take it anymore. So I locked myself in the house for 4 weeks. My hair started to fall out. And
You ran yourself into bad health, essentially.
I did, yeah. I was going downhill all the time. And I never knew it, so I didn't.
Yeah, unconsciously.
You know, loneliness. It was the loneliness. It's from, I had friends coming 2 or 3 times a week to me. But after 9 o'clock, you're in the house by yourself. No one to talk to.
And no cup of tea.
no cup of tea or anything. Yeah. That's when it really hits you.
Yeah, yeah, of course. And what was the turning point for you? You know, I mean, you were in this state where you were, your health was going down, you were lonely, you felt isolated, you missed Mary terribly.
Yeah.
And there was a realization there that you were never going to get that 9 o'clock cup of tea again. You'd have to make it yourself. And what was the turning point for you, Val, then?
Well, the turning point was I was just so bad, they sent a priest down to me, my kids. And he told me, if you don't get out of the house, you're going to get yourself into bad health. I told him I would, but still, I could not face it. And one day, a friend of mine came to my house. He said, come on, he said, I'll take you for a spin. And the spin was to the Min Shed. And that changed my life completely.
And for people who, we kind of think of the Men's Shed as being a shed. And some of them literally are sheds, corrugated iron roof sheds. But where is your Men's Shed?
In Ballina, as you come into Foxhill Road, it was an old story of cinema.
Right, okay.
In Ballina. And it's on your right-hand side coming in. You can't miss it. It's a big building. And that's where the Ballina Min Shed is.
Okay, so lads similar to yourself who maybe have gone through a bit of a tough time in their lives, maybe they're unemployed, maybe they've lost somebody and they're just looking for a sense of purpose or someone to talk to, other lads to talk to, can go in there and they'll maybe learn a new trade, you know, meet a tiler or somebody who operates a lathe and they have bits and pieces in there that you can practice on or you can just sit around and have a cup of tea, I suppose.
Yeah, anybody can come into the Min Shed. It's there for every type of person. You don't have to have a trade to be in the Min Shed.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is welcome. You come in, they have bridge there, they have art classes, you can watch television, you can help out in the workshop, and you can go in at dinner time. We have dinner there, and you can make a cup of tea anytime you like and relax with the lads, because everyone is welcome in the Min Sheds.
And has everybody, from what you've talked about, and obviously we can't talk about other people on the air apart from the two of yous, but everybody that you've met and you've associated with in the Men's Shed, do they all have a bit of a story, Val? Is there a story?
Yeah, there's a lot of them in the same situation as me. They've lost someone and they have nowhere to go and they're lonely, but they're lonely, so they are. And it's not until it hits your own doorstep that you realise how loneliness can affect your health.
Oh, I can imagine. Isolation has a huge effect. Yeah.
But when you come into the Min Shed, it's a different atmosphere, so it is. Everyone welcomes you in, so they do.
And what's the story with the Men's Shed now at the moment during this kind of these restrictions? I mean, how is that operating?
Well, it's not operating at the moment, and I can tell you I miss it, but it's the summertime now, and I have a lot of work to do in the back garden. Only for that, I don't know what I do, but I'm looking forward to the Min Shed opening again, and I think the government should give more money to the likes of those places.
Of course, because mental health is so important.
Yeah, mental health. I don't think I'll be here only for the Min Shed.
Well, I'm glad you're here, Val.
What happened too in the Min Shed with me was I never knew I had blood pressure. Nurses came in one day just checking us out, and the nurse came up to me. She said, Val, your blood pressure has gone through the roof. I said, I feel great, I said. But she said, you want to go to your GP. So I took no heed of her. And two days later, that nurse rang me up and she said, did you go to your GP? No. She said, you're on the brink of a major heart attack and it runs in your family. So I ran over to my doctor, and the way he looked at me, he said, you're a lucky man. And he said to me, I had no symptoms. That's why we call this the silent killer. And it's a good job you were in the Min Shed, or you wouldn't have found out you had this problem.
And what would be the average age group in the Men's Shed?
We have young fellas, 30 or 40, any young boys, anyone, everyone is welcome in the Min Shed. Age doesn't count.
Okay, well, let me go to Johnny Hanafy as well, because Johnny is also a member of the Men's Shed. Johnny, how are you doing?
I'm good, yourself.
Johnny, what made you go to the Men's Shed? What's the story behind it? Were you lonely or isolated?
Well, I lost my wife in 2013.
Okay.
And I was here on my own.
How long were you married?
And I agree with a lot that Val said. I've only one son. He's down in Cork, so
okay.
On my own here. So T.P. O'Gorman, who started the Min Shed in Kilbeggan, rang me.
Yeah.
And he told me about the men's shed was starting, but I'd be interested in going. I didn't know what he was talking about, but I said, look, I'll give it a go anyway.
Yeah.
So I went over anyway, and that's where it started. I went over. I knew, the only one I knew in the shed at, when I went over was TP.
Yeah.
And there was about 15 or 20 men there. And before I came home, I had friends for life. That's the way it is.
Right. And basically somebody that you could talk to because you'd
somebody know. Somebody could talk to. Yeah. And our men's shed is full of different people from different parts of life. We've ex-teachers, ex-army, ex-farmers, you know.
And how long were you married, Johnny?
I was like, over 30 years.
Okay. And what was your wife's name?
Maureen.
And what happened to Maureen?
She got myeloma.
Oh, okay.
Know what that is.
Yeah, yeah.
Cancer of the tissue of the blood. And she got 10 years out of it, and she just passed away. And
she was your best friend in life, of course.
Oh, of course she was my best friend in life, yeah. So.
And like Val, how did you handle the grief after she died? I mean, did you isolate yourself?
Before, I remember after she died, I was on my own here. And I sat down. My son was with me, Ivan, and Karen, the wife, and the two little children. They were heading back to Cork. And I went out the door with him, and I went and I came back in, and the silence was so silent.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so lonely. I walked in, I sat down on the couch, and I said to myself, I said, no, you either sink or you swim. So I said, I'd swim. And the men's shed was the biggest help. But after, it was no length after the TP rang me to go to the men's shed. And that was the start of my life. I got a new life, a new lease of life. Now, having said that, I wouldn't be like Val. I'm outgoing.
Right, okay.
And I've been involved with a lot of other organisations.
Mm-hmm. Val was telling us that, you know, he was showing other guys, you know, how to, I think it was wood turning he was talking. Yeah. Was it wood turning, wasn't it, Val, you were doing?
Yeah, so yeah, wood turning. We do a lot of wood turning.
We have a wonderful workshop. The man who wants to go into a workshop, they're entitled to go into it, they went to it.
Yeah.
We have our computer room.
Yeah.
We have a tunnel for anyone who's interested in gardening.
Right.
And we have, what's most important, a very good kitchen. We bake our own bread and our scones.
Right, so you do a bit of baking, a bit of cooking, and a bit of working.
And then we have a few fantastic musicians, and we do have a great session of music as well.
Right, so you're learning, I mean, and I spoke to somebody after I talked to Val the other day, and we were talking about that culturally how Ireland has changed, but in the days that you guys were married, it was quite common that, you know, a wife would stay at home and she did a lot of the cooking and she did a lot of the cleaning and the ironing. And I was saying that although, you know, the world has changed now and men play a different role in a marriage nowadays, it's a very different world we live in. You know, at the time, I suppose many men, when their wives passed away, not particularly you lads, but when their wives passed away, they felt a sense of uselessness.
That's a fact. You know, they just felt they were useless and they weren't wanting.
Yeah. Some lads couldn't even iron a shirt, you know what I mean?
You're correct. We're dependent off that. Our generation depended an awful lot on the wife. She did the cooking, she did the washing, she did the ironing. Yes.
Yeah.
She practically ran your life.
So you basically went from your mother to your wife. And,
they went from your mother to your wife, and that's a fact. That's the way Ireland was.
Yeah.
And she was there, she was always there.
Yeah, she did everything.
With a fire lit.
Well, she made Val's tea at 9 o'clock every evening, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So these wonderful women, you know, of the time, I mean, they weren't just wives and best friends, but they were essentially carers for their husbands.
Yeah, your mother.
Right.
Yeah, so they looked after them, you know?
When you went out the door, they worried about you because you come back.
Yeah.
No, so.
And so for younger people listening, they don't really have an understanding of that now because the world is so different now and it's very different in the way we...
Yeah, it's much different, yeah. Probably for the better.
Yeah, of course, because it makes people a bit more independent. But there but there is this thing as well, and listening to Val the other day and listening to him again today, there is this thing, there was a research in the paper the other day that said this particular lockdown was going to affect women more than men, right? I think it was like 37% versus 25% of women mentally affected by this, right, or mental health. But I don't believe that's true. I think men are very slow to talk to other people when they have problems or when they're feeling lonely or down. There's a kind of macho thing that we're lads and we can't really talk. But I think the men's shed, you know, because you're getting to meet other lads in the same situation, it helps.
Oh, yeah, the men's shed, I mean, it's, we will talk about that now in the men's shed.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't normally talk about politics or hurling or football or whatever sport.
Yeah.
women will talk about their personal life, and in the men's shed we do. We discuss our health.
And you compare, I suppose you'd compare stories about how you're feeling. And
of course we do, yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, a bit of a, and you're a bit of support for each other too, apart from anything else.
Yeah, we are. We're a crutch for each other, if you put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And we do a great crack as well, like, you know.
What age are you, Johnny, by the way?
I'm 72.
And how are you handling the cocooning at the moment, or the kind of staying?
Well, I'm lucky enough that way, because I have a fairly big garden and I get lost in the garden. So, I like gardening.
Right, okay.
So, I actually don't see it that bad.
Okay.
The only thing I miss is going to town and doing a bit of shopping and all that, but I have a wonderful niece.
Yeah.
Jillian, and she looks after that for me. So I'm all right that way.
Okay, and you're looking forward to getting back to the men's shed.
We're following each other every day, each member, and we have, you know, the kind of show. We've four of the TP, Frank Brennan, myself, and Mick Rush. We have a quiz every Wednesday night and every Saturday night. So we have our phone on the phone.
You have the quiz on the phone?
We have the quiz on the phone, yeah.
Right, Val, are you doing anything? Val, are you using any technology?
No, I'm not. No, I'm just sitting here. You know, I don't use any technology.
Yeah.
It's just phone, you know what I mean, and likes of that.
Yeah, and do you have technology, Val? Do you have, like, an iPhone or a tablet or...?
Well, no, I'm not into that. I prefer going doing out to the shed and doing a little bit of wood turning. That's what really...
Yeah.
Keeps me going, you know what I mean? It's a great pastime, and when you're in the men's shed, there's people coming up looking at you, and you're showing them what to do, and they love looking at you, and then we'll teach them, if they want to be taught, how to wood turn in, and we have our classes, everything is there for everyone that comes into the shed.
Yeah, well, the reason you lads are on today is because I was quite touched by it the other day, and all this stuff doesn't come for free, of course, because somebody has to pay for it all.
Yeah.
And I know they do get some level of funding, probably not enough like most organisations.
No, not enough.
And they also fundraise, which they can't do at the moment. And we need people to donate. So I want everybody listening today, I know everybody is asking you for money. And I know people as well are short of money, and I'm well aware of that because a lot of people are out of work at the moment. But you might be getting your COVID payment, and you might have a few quid stashed away. So we just want everyone to give you €4. And by the way, this is not just for men maybe who've lost their wives; it's for people who've retired, because there's a sense sometimes of lack of purpose when you retire. A lot of men, particularly of the older generation, where they were the providers in the homes and they worked all their lives. When they eventually retire, they become very bored and lonely and isolated from their social life and work. Similar to women will, of course, very soon, because, of course, women obviously started their careers a lot later than men in this country because of the way this country worked. So it does seem that it's for everybody who finds that loneliness. So I want everyone to reach into their pocket today. And all you got to do is send a text. Now, the text will cost you €4, and apart from obviously your network charges, the rest of the money will go to the men's shed. And it will help people like Johnny, people like Val, and many other men. And it is men, because we talk about women a lot. There's a lot of women's organisations, and we give them plenty of coverage as well. But I think it's really important that we talk about men's mental health as well, because it's very, very important. Because unfortunately in this country, more men take their own lives every year than women. By the vast majority, more men take their lives, because I suppose there's a sense of purpose. Men feel it, maybe it's built into our DNA that we're providers, and when that stops happening somehow, that or we lose our wives, we feel a lack of purpose. So I want you all to donate €4, and to do it, everybody just take out their phones now. Come on, take out your phones. I'm going to take out mine. Yeah, I'm going to do mine now. Okay. Hold on, let me just open my my text here. Okay, now. I want everybody to text, okay? And all you got to do is put in the phone number first, okay? So it's 50300, okay? So it's 50300, all right? And all you got to do is text the word sheds, okay? SHEDS, sheds. And do it right now. So it's 50300. Now remember that text, but it will cost you €4. And the usual networks, the usual network charges apply, but the rest of the money goes directly to the men's sheds, all right? Okay, lads, I really wish you the best of luck, both of you.
Thanks, yeah.
And all the men that go to the men's sheds. I know women have book clubs and things like that as well, which are not really book clubs. They're just places where they go and drink wine, drink tea and talk to each other, which is great as well. But for men, I mean, this to me, and Kev, by the way, says, Kev in Limerick is one of my regular listeners, says, I almost switched off when you started this, but I'm delighted I didn't. What an eye-opener. Best topic in ages. And I think it's really important that people understand it. Because, lads, I had no idea what the men's sheds were up to this point. I cared of it, but I didn't understand how important it was. And I think it is important, Val, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of the most important things going for the likes of people that have retired and lost somebody. I can tell you, I have a new lease of life now. I'm looking forward to the minch in the game, going up at 10 o'clock and leaving it at 3 or 4. And we have a snooker table in the Bellingham shed. A snooker table, and anyone can come in and play snooker.
Johnny, do you have a snooker table in your men's shed?
No, but we have a dartboard.
And we have a dartboard too in the men's shed, in Bellingham.
We have our computer rooms, and we have music. I tell you what, we have fantastic music in our shed.
Yeah. Well, look, there's men's sheds all over the country. And of course, it is an organisation, Men's Sheds, who operate this and who fund this. Again, as I said here, it doesn't come for free. These things all cost money. And we're asking people to donate. So please, once again, take out your phone and donate €4. To do that, all you got to do is text the word men, or text the word sheds, not men's sheds, sorry, sheds. That's SHEDS. And you text it to 50300. So that's 50300. All right, do it now. Lads, thank you. And I wish
Thanks
you well.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks very much.
And I'll be thinking about you all weekend. All right.
Yeah, okay. All right.
See
Thanks
you.
Very much.
Bye.
Very
bye.
Much.
There's Johnny and Val from the men's sheds. I just thought I'd give that a bit more airtime than it deserved, or should I say, because the other day Val was on and I kind of rushed him. It was the end of the show and I rushed him and I felt really bad after rushing him off because it was such a wonderful story and how the men's shed was just life-changing. So once again, please do it. Take out your phone before I go into the break here, okay? Take out your phone. Come on. Everybody do it listening. Please, just do it for me. I don't ask you to do very much like this, so please just do it for me. And text the word sheds to 50300, okay? 50300. Remember, text costs you €4. And, of course, the usual network charges will apply there as well. Somebody says, donated. Best of luck raising money for the men's sheds. Now, that comes in from Nicola. Thank you, Nicola. And thank you to everybody. Send me a text if you want to tell me and I'll read out your text. All right? And I'll try my best to read out most of them as well. Now, after the break, I want to know about your mental health and how you're affected by this lockdown. A lot of people have been saying it and the UN have put out a warning in the last few days that not only do we have a COVID-19 crisis, but when that finishes, we're going to have a mental health crisis. People will die. And people will die of despair. Because, of course, people have lost their jobs. Their lives have changed. There'll be poverty. People haven't gone to hospital when they should have gone because if you have early diagnosis, obviously, of illness. So the secondary effects are going to be very lasting in this COVID-19, probably worse than the actual virus itself in some sense, which begs the whole question, can we justify what we're doing at the moment? But again, we'll talk about that in the future. But your mental health, how is your mental health? Are you over 70 and cocooning and lonely at the moment? Are you under 70 and missing your mother or your father who's over 70? Maybe your grandparents, you haven't seen them in ages. How is your mental health? How are you handling? Maybe if you're living in an apartment and you don't happen to have a back garden and you're going out of your mind with 3 kids because there's nothing for you to do, nowhere for you to go. It's getting a little bit easier. But how are you? Huh? I don't know whether the government has focused very much on it. Mind you, I haven't seen Leo Varadkar very much, our leader. I see every other leader, by the way, on television on a regular basis, including Boris Johnson, back out there again. Donald Trump, love him or hate him, he's on the television nearly every single night. Probably one of the hardest working presidents in the world, even though you might not like him. I've seen Leo Varadkar only for the announcements. And there was one interview in the Late Late Show, and I think one he did in News Talk yesterday. And the more recent announcement there 2 weeks ago about the lifting of restrictions, he didn't allow any questions. So I haven't seen him very much. To me, that's not what a leader does. At a time like this, we want to see the leader. We want to see the people who are guiding us every single night and we want to see them questioned about it. But that's not happening in this country. In this country, it's just, here are the rules, do it. That's the way it works. We make the decisions. I don't find that very exciting for the citizens. But getting back to isolation and how this is affecting people's mental health. And we spoke to the lads there for the men's shed a few minutes ago. And mental health is going to be a big thing we need to focus on over the coming year, particularly, and going forward as well. Carl, you're on Classic Hits. How you doing, Carl?
How you doing, Niall?
Carl, your friend's father went to the men's shed.
Yeah, about 15 years ago, my friend died, and it was so sudden. He's only young, 27 years of age, and so the father was, mother and father was...
devastated, I imagine, yeah.
Of course, yeah. It was literally, he's fine, and then a couple of weeks later, he was dead, and sudden. So, they were 66, 67 at the time they were, and... I'm close with the family, so I've always just visited and just dropped in how he's doing and that. But the father never could, he could never get to grips with it, you know, come to terms with it.
Yeah.
And I remember that about a year then after that, I dropping into the house and he telling me he's after joining this men's shed. And he showed me a little plaque that a little like a wooden thingy that he was after making. He says, oh, I made that up in the men's shed. I joined it there 2 weeks ago. And it was just a little place that for elderly men to go to. And there was other men there that they could have a chat with. And it was just somewhere to go. Because he couldn't speak to his wife. He just couldn't talk to her about it.
Yeah.
And
I understand why that can happen. I do want to point out, by the way, it's not... I know there is some younger men that go to it too, but it does primarily seem to be older men, maybe retired.
There is some younger, but mainly it was older, but... Just me watching that man as the weeks then went on, just the lift that gave him. And he's actually 80 now, and he's still in it today.
So it kind of gives him a sense of purpose, doesn't it?
Yeah. He goes a couple of mornings a week, just up, potters around. They make projects between them, and as well, just a bit of banter as well, I suppose.
And he probably confides in some of the lads about how he feels about his son and missing him, and more so. And I know this sounds hard, but more so than his wife
because he can't, because it was so upsetting that he just says, I can't talk to her about it, you know.
Because he probably knows how upset she is about it too, and he doesn't want to maybe upset her even more. So I mean, and it's difficult sometimes. It's a generational thing, by the way, Carl. I think we maybe find it difficult to understand, but older men find it difficult to talk to their wives about things like that.
I would agree. Yeah, my own father, we would be the same. Yeah.
It's generational, you know. Yeah. I mean, we were raised differently, I suppose, in some sense. But they are. There's that kind of macho thing, isn't it? You know, I'm a man and I shouldn't be upset and I shouldn't be lonely and I shouldn't feel like this.
Well, just get about this quarantine thing. They're going on mental health for the past, you know, people sitting at home. I don't know, my mother laughed at this there last week. She says to me, she says, I've been in quarantine for 7 years. Mm-hmm. I walk a lot and then I come home. I don't go out. Couple of my friends died when they were young, and it's like 7 years I've sat in this house.
Yeah,
my wife lives abroad, doesn't like Ireland, could never take to it when she came here, so she went back home. It was like 7 years walking and sitting around doing nothing.
Yeah,
and it does take its toll.
Yeah,
and people do get lonely if you're living alone or. You know, you've no family around you. It can be lonely.
Yeah, and I know there probably is. I'll find out in a second, but I know there are. Well, look, you know, you can contact places like Women's Aid and the Women's Council of Ireland and all these other. There's women's networks.
I don't think they're good enough, Niall.
Yeah.
Is
there an equivalent to the men's shed for women? I know they do. I know there's coffee mornings and there's they do the book clubs, which are not really book clubs a lot of the time. But there is women's sheds, I believe. Helena's just told me, Mary. There is actually a women's shed organisation too. So, there, you know, where women can go.
Yeah.
You know?
I think when people wake up in the morning, they're at their best.
Yeah.
But I think it's then as later as the day goes on. And especially in the long winters in Ireland, come 4 o'clock, people are sitting in darkness at home. You know, and... You look out the window when it's grey and raining and cold.
But you know, aren't we very lucky in some sense that this lockdown happened during probably
so
the best...
Summer.
Well, not only just summer, but the best 6 weeks of weather we've probably had in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it realistically, up to this weekend, it hasn't rained in
if it had been raining for the past 6 weeks,
oh, we
people were just sitting in there. Yeah, there would have been.
Well, listen, thanks for that. Thanks very much indeed, and I appreciate it. I'm glad that your father-in-law, or should I say father, is father-in-law, wasn't it? It was father-in-law.
Oh, it was a friend.
Oh, it was friend's father, sorry. Yeah.
Thanks very much.
I'm glad he's feeling much better now. All right, lots of messages, by the way, coming in. I'm going to go to Nigel in a second. Hang on.
Hi, Nigel. My name is Martina Ross. You're asking how are we feeling? I'm feeling very sad at the moment. Should I feel sad? Well, I'm still working. I work in Dunn Stores in the Pavilion Shopping Centre. But I drive into work every day on the motorway, and I see all these signs. Stay safe, protect one another, # hold firm. And even though I'm just a supermarket worker, I'm hearing very sad stories on the registers. And yeah, I just feel very, very sad at the moment. And yeah, that's the way I feel. Love the show, Niall. Thanks for asking us that question.
I think it's important we ask that question. How are you all feeling? Because I think it's really important. And I can just listening to her voice there, I know that she's upset. And she's upset not just for herself, but thinking about other people and thinking how this and how the world around us at the moment is affecting other people. Now, loads of people, by the way, texting in saying they're donating to Men's Shed and found the interview very uplifting listening to the two lads. And Nigel, you're on Classic Kids. How are you doing, Nigel?
How are you, Niall? How are you?
Nigel, Men's Shed, you believe it's a great initiative.
It's invaluable, Niall. You can't put a price on it. You really can't. I think as the two boys, first of all, listening to them is gut-wrenching, as well as it's half gut-wrenching and it's half really...
because you could see yourself in that position as you get older. Of course you can.
As a man, you can, Niall. You can see yourself losing the person. The one person that keeps you alive is dead.
I can't imagine it.
No, the one person that gives you a function, the one person that puts a smile on your face in the morning time when you look at her, is gone. And as you listen to them two boys, oh, Jesus, terrible. I'm crying driving the van out. I'm not messing with you.
You big softy, Nigel.
I've tried this show before.
But you see, now, actually, do you know what? I've just made a huge mistake there, because I've done exactly what I'm telling people not to do. I've just called you a big softy, joking, obviously, right? But isn't this the problem? That men are afraid to be soft.
They don't want to be known as a big softy, Niall.
Yeah, I know. And there I am perpetrating the stereotype. So
I'm 6'4" and 15 stone, Niall. I look anything but a big softy, you know what I mean? But yeah. I've no problem admitting, live on radio, I am a big softy.
Well, so am I by times, by the way.
Especially when you listen to boys like that.
Yeah.
And I've worked you know by them, Niall. You know by listening, they've worked. They're honest men. They're honest men that love their wife, love their families, work hard. You can hear it in their voice.
But I can visualise Val and his wife, Mary, at 9 o'clock after she's walked the dogs, comes back and sits down with him, makes him a cup of tea, and all his life, that's what he's done at exactly the same time, like a routine. She'll make him a cup of tea and maybe give him a little peck on the forehead before she goes to bed. I can visualise the scene in the room.
When he said that, will you have a cup? I seen her coming through the kitchen or sitting room door now.
I know, I could see how she was dressed. I see how she was dressed. And everybody listening could. And for a lot of elderly men, this is a generation thing too, that was their wives looked after them, and when their wives went or died or passed away or whatever happens, they're lost. They feel that there's no purpose.
I saw it with my own granddad back in my granddad passed away in 2002, my granny passed away in 1993, and I've seen that 9 years. He was a big, same as myself, he was a big strong fella. He boxed in the army, he worked with his hands. He was an engineer. He was a big, strong, hard man, tough. And I physically seen him dwindle.
I saw it with my own father when my mother died as well.
He changed. My mother always says the fizz was going out of his lemonade. That's the way she said it. His life went flat. You know, he still went down for a couple of points. He still did that. But he sat in the house on his own, and that killed him.
I know, and for a lot of elderly men, that's very difficult, particularly as well, not just people who passed away, but people who are retired too, who need a sense of purpose. Nigel, I have to go to Jude very quickly. Nigel, thank you very much indeed, and you're right, it is a great initiative, Men's Shed. Jude, you're on Classic Hits. How you doing, Jude?
Hello, sir.
How are you?
I'm calling you, sir, today because you have such a good programme. I normally call you Niall.
All right, okay. Well, I appreciate that. And I hate to tell you that I'm going to have to rush you a teeny bit because I've only got 2.5 minutes, unfortunately.
Before the
news.
Maybe another time.
And I tell you what, I would love to talk to you more another time because Helena was kind of in my ear during the break telling me what you want to talk about. But the crux of it is that you have suffered from depression. And that, to you, the kind of lockdown at the moment, when you're looking around, that's your normal, I suppose, in some sense.
Yeah.
And how has that affected you on a day-to-day basis? Or how long has that been going on for you?
It started about 30... Well, really, it started around the year 2000. I had a relationship. I was going out with a girl. I had a top job. I wasn't drinking. I had my life totally in order. Unfortunately, the year 2000 celebration came along, and I was attacked violently that night at the end of the night. And I went into 3 months of post-traumatic stress syndrome. And,
okay.
I didn't realize what it was at the time. I just isolated myself. And then, that's fine. I forced myself out again, back to work, and 3.5 years, 4 years. And I had an accident at work where a certain individual... And I'll cut a long story short. There was a lot of trauma there. And in 2005, I went straight into maybe 9 months of total depression. But anyways, it continued.
And when you say total depression, there was a kind of sense of having no purpose every time you woke up in the morning.
No purpose, no reason to live, not to eating properly, not to... I took care of myself since I was 16 years of age, totally self-sufficient, traveled around the world, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to go outside the door, didn't want to see people. Total isolation, only go out late in the evening, walk the dog, and that was it. That was my exercise. But to fast forward to now, 10 years basically, and the medical profession, all they throw you medication.
Yeah, I know. People are overprescribed antidepressants. I know that.
What was it? It's a cure-all. I asked for counselling. It's not available. The government is not funding. You're on the waiting list for 7 years.
So here's some tablets to keep you going.
Would you go and talk to them in the psychiatric? And yeah. I heard so many bad stories back from that.
There was a great article in the Irish Examiner there last year where a young girl, a reporter, who wasn't suffering from depression, went to like 16 GPs saying she was depressed, pretending to be depressed, and they all diagnosed her with antidepressants.
Yeah, oh yeah. And that actually destroys you more because a certain medication will throw you into what that other type of depression where you spiral up and down.
Yeah, well, you go into a kind of clinical depression, manic depression, yeah. Yeah,
and it's very hard to get out of that. I've seen friends of mine that had depression, and they were medic, and I actually would carry regular depression for 1,000 years rather than being the state that they were in. They totally.
So I suppose
when they went high, they went off the head. Like
I suppose in some sense, because I was telling you something about Aisling the other day here at work, and Aisling gets very worried about diseases and all that, but she's actually handled this crisis better than most people because she said because she's always worried about stuff like that, she's got practice in it. So in other words, I suppose for everybody else, the mental health of this is very difficult, but for you, it's something. This is your life. You've been doing this
exactly,
all along.
I said at least now I'm not alone. Everybody else, but I want to come back to the medical profession again. I went to the psychiatric and seen them then, and same thing. And I took them on, and I, 7 of them actually came in, the head leader. I said, if ye think you're helping people with mental illness that come in here, and giving them medication, you can go home at the end of the day to your families or whatever, and clap yourself in the back and say you did a good job. I said, you're sadly mistaken, because all you're doing is poisoning.
Or masking the problem.
And I turned to alcohol for a period of time then, and a lot of people that have alcohol problems are just self-medicating. But I spent a week with my brother last week, believe it or not, and we won't say about quarantine or whatever, but I've been in quarantine for the last 10 years.
Okay, so you know what's going on. Jude, I don't want to cut you short, but unfortunately I have to go into the news now, right? But I tell you what, if you want to, I would love to get you on again to talk in more detail about it, if you're willing to do that.
I just want to share this with the
people. Well, actually, I'll tell you what. Hang on with me there, and I'll go to the news, and I'll come straight back to you after the news. Would that be okay?
No. Most of it is childhood trauma. That's all I want to say to people out there. And it's very deep in the subconscious. You can come back to me afterwards if you want.
All right, okay. Thanks, Jude. I got to go to the news. The number is 087-188-0008, because I hate rushing people through interviews. There's nothing worse than that. But unfortunately, of course, we have to give people the news. We have to pay the bills. All those kind of things have to be done as well. But it's important that we hear everybody's story without being rushed through it. The number is 087-188-0008. All right, we want to get back to talking about mental health. And a lot of people text in. Somebody says, your caller is bang on. Mental health is a big issue in Ireland for a long time. I told a mental health care worker who was visiting a relative one day that the HSE service she worked worked for were nothing but state-paid drug pushers. My relative cheered at my statement, but she is still taking all 12 different scripts a day that she's been prescribed. Let me go back to Jude, who I didn't want to cut short before the break. Sorry, Jude, for cutting you a little bit short before the news there. And I'm glad to have you back on again. So, Jude, how are you now?
Believe it or not, Niall, a miracle has after happened over the last week.
Okay.
And my brother rang. My sister and brother used to call in to me, and they'd see the state I was in, like, and I'm a 50-year-old man, but they say I look like a 75-year-old. I've been to, this is the previous time, say, last year. I had no dressing gown on. I hadn't been out in days. I hadn't eaten properly. Hadn't shaved. They say, you look like, you know, I'm getting emotional now. You look like a man of 75 years of age. When they left, they couldn't help me because I didn't know what was wrong with myself. I didn't know I was. I travelled the world. Some would say I'd be in Australia, I'd be in China tomorrow and be gone. I wouldn't even think about
it. So you were a very outgoing person.
Oh, totally. And one of the best workers I know that today. But they said, he told me last week, he said, they used to go home, drive home. They said, we have to, you know, they were thinking of arranging a funeral. We'll go in someday and find that. That's how bad I was now.
Mm-hmm.
So the brother rang the sister.
I suppose, sorry for interrupting you, but it's a bit like, I suppose, alcoholism and everything else, is that you have to admit and be honest with yourself, admit that you have a problem.
Yeah, but it gets buried in the subconscious so much you don't know. Even if a person tells you, you cannot see it until that thing pops up that triggered it originally. Like if people have gone through childhood trauma, you know, people that are sexually abused, whatever. They bury that so deep to protect themselves. And they could come out of it and go on and have a brilliant life, but at a later stage,
it comes back.
This dark, no, it doesn't come. I wish it'd come back. You go into a dark spiral. You could have a brilliant life, big money, job, everything. And you go into this deep darkness, and you don't know what triggers it until some professional, really professional counselor or whatever, gets you to go back and say, what triggered this? And my brother actually invited me out last week, and he actually told me later, he told the sister, I'm going to give it one more go. I'm going to invite him out here, and I'm going to go to town on him. I'm going to get him to lose his temper to see where all this is. And it took him 3 days, and I realized I got angry. I had such, from my childhood, like bad schooling and very... One of my teachers was very, very cruel to me. And she was cruel to others also, but I didn't see this like.
Yeah.
And my home life wasn't so good because my dad was a little bit... He wasn't there for us. He couldn't be there. But then some other trauma happened, and it's like a black veil is thrown over you and you can't see clearly. And
you just can't shake it off, yeah.
All the traumas all the way, maybe 5 or 10, a little black veil is thrown over every time, and you end up in dark.
Because people don't understand is our mind, not our brain as such, because our brain just computes and keeps the body running.
Yeah.
But our mind, it's like any other part of your body. I mean, if you keep hitting your leg for long enough, eventually you'll break it or you'll bruise it or do a lot of permanent damage to it. And if you keep hitting your mind, or if your mind keeps getting traumatized by different things, eventually it's going to get damaged. And again, just like that, because we can't see it, it is invisible in people. We don't know. And when we look at people on television, I've often thought that, you know, when you look at people, like I remember 2 years ago, Aunt Mac Partland from Ant and Dec. So here's this wonderful guy on the television who's happy, 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 happy. And because it's acting, of course. But in his own life, he was going through so much depression. He was on medications. He was drink driving. He destroyed his marriage. And we don't see that in people because we can see a broken leg, but we can't see somebody's mind. So we don't know what they're going through.
But I could spend 24 hours on the air with you trying to explain this, and still, unless you...
You fix your phone there, Jude. You're a bit muffled there. Sorry, Jude.
Yeah, I'm back again now. I'm just figuring out. I could spend 24 hours in the air with you trying to explain, but unless you've been through that darkness, I guarantee you, Jude, I have.
I went through a marriage breakup 3 years ago. Look, it's a matter of a record. I've been in the papers talking about it. And I stood on Hoth Head over three years ago, wondering, was there any purpose to life? And it was 4 o'clock in the morning, and if it hadn't been for a phone call from a good friend who wanted to come see me, they were in Kildare, but they talked to me for 3 or 4 hours, and every night since, around that time. And if it hadn't been for them, I don't know where I'd be today.
You would have been
swimming halfway to England, I'd say.
Oh, well, possibly. Possibly. And thankfully then I met a wonderful woman, my new partner. I met her and she completely changed my life. And you know what the one thing she said to me when I was feeling down at the very, very start, when I met her first, and it was probably one of the very first conversations I had with her. And it was like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And she said to me, you have to learn to value yourself.
It's you. What would you do with them? And I told her bluntly, I said, I'd catch him by the scruff of the neck, drag him down to the river, put a bullet in him and throw him in. Mm-hmm. Well, she says, you have to become your own best friend. At the end of the day, you're no one else to fall back on.
Yeah, absolutely. But just very quickly, in relation to the prescribed medication, somebody mentioned there earlier on about their relative being constantly prescribed medication. Now, by the way, there are some people who are on medication which it works well for them,
it
right?
It works, it does, yeah.
Absolutely. So I don't want to diss medication completely, because some people it's vital. But there are others who talk therapy would work a lot better than medication.
But it's like anything, everybody has different DNA structure, different mental illness. But I don't think it should even be categorized as a mental illness. It's an emotional illness. It's in the heart if you've gone through trauma. And it's Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud turned psychiatry on his head when he took over. He was an atheist and he didn't believe in the psychobabble. The word psycho means soul. Psychiatry means psychoanalyst. If you go out into the Amazon or any of the tribal, there's always a head doctor there. They call him a witch doctor because the West didn't agree with it. But that person in the tribe was the top psychiatrist for the tribe. And anyone that was suffering trauma would go to him and he would analyze where the trauma came from. But Sigmund Freud took over and he said, I think he read the Bible and he called God a madman. But he put it all in the head. And then the pharmaceutical companies came over and we treated it with chemicals. It's an emotional illness. Sometimes it's mental for some. Medication works for some. But it's emotional, like cognitive behavioral therapy. That will go to the root of the emotional trigger.
And how are you... this very day today, you say this week has been life-changing, and you've said that. Did you have a shave?
No, I'm still lying in bed, relaxing. First time in months or years did I get up and clean my apartment. I brought my dog to the vet. I cleaned my apartment. I put some food on. Like, I could go to the food when I was in this deep profession, look in, and the fridge would be full, but I'd be so sick in the stomach that my stomach would turn, and cereal I'd survive on just because it was convenient.
Yeah,
that was the worst of the depression. Like I said, I travelled the world.
And what are you good at? Do you want to get back out working again?
This is what I said. I wrote down a few jots here to say a lot of people work at a fruitless work. It's just that they have to do it.
Yeah.
You have to find...
Yeah, in at nine, home at five, hate your job. Yeah.
And you have no choice because you have to pay the mortgage, feed the kids, etc. This has given a lot... This quarantine thing has given a lot of people food for thought, and they're thinking, look, what am I doing in this mundane job running like a hamster on a hamster wheel? Going back, rather. Take time, chill out, say, look at... What do I love doing? What will bring me joy in my life and joy in my family's life? Retrain for a new job, a job that you love. I read something there. I have a candle there. It says, find out what you're good at. Find out what you love doing. And get someone to pay you for it. You'll never...
And what do you love doing?
Listen to me today. I can see I'm multi-talented. I've written hundreds of songs, thousands of poems.
Yeah.
I bought 7 or 8 guitars in the last 20 years.
Did you get anything? Have you had anything published yet or anything like that? No.
My stuff has travelled the world because I put it in the backpack and I said, I'll be up in Mount Shasta and I'll rewrite it. And
have you got a poem there? Do you have a poem there? Handy?
I do, yeah. Off the top of the head, I have 100 in my head.
All right, give us a quick one.
This was one in America, but I'll give you the one in Galway first. What is it? Walking down by the river that flows out of Galway Bay, feeling a little lonesome for I know I'm going away. Walking through the cladder with his fair feathered friends, the beautiful white swans that seem to glide along. Here am I in Sydney, part of New South Wales, the hills of Connemara seem so far away.
Three years
after writing that, I ended up at my best man at my brother's wedding in Sydney, in New South Wales, and I didn't even know New South Wales was that part.
Well, there you go. There's a coincidence. Jude, it's been wonderful talking to you, by the way. And I know a lot of people listening today can absolutely appreciate your story. And you know, they're probably maybe in that position or they're close to that position. And maybe you have maybe given them a little bit of food for thought that they might just give themselves a little bit of a kick in the ass and get themselves back out there again or try to do something and realize that what they're going through is repairable. It is repairable.
It is repairable.
Yeah.
The only medication I'm on at the moment is when this COVID-19 came around, people said, a friend of mine recommended vitamin.
Yeah.
1,000 milligrams, vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc and magnesium. And I'm on that for the last 2 weeks.
It's not bad for you. I mean, I'm taking vitamins now as well at the moment. I'm taking 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C every day as well. But you can buy them fairly cheap in your local supermarket, the little tubes.
Very cheap. Yeah. Less than 50 euros. 1,000 milligrams of vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc and
magnesium.
And
it's good for your body. It helps your body create antibodies, you know. So if you did get COVID-19, the symptoms hopefully wouldn't be quite as bad because obviously your body would produce those antibodies a bit quicker. It's certainly not a cure, but it certainly helps people, a preventative measure, I suppose.
My biggest fear in the depression was that I actually lost interest in taking care of myself, to put on food, to eat properly.
Did you lose weight or put on weight?
I lost weight.
Okay.
I used to be nearly 11 and a half stone. At one stage, I went down to 8.5 stone. Because you can't eat. You're so sick.
You don't feel the purpose. There's no purpose, and you don't feel like you couldn't be bothered even making something.
Just that you can't do it. Dishes lying in the sink for a week or a month, and I used to be clean. I mean, but in the last week, when I'm out of it, I come out of it in spurts maybe for a week or a month, and I'm eating 3 dinners a day. I'm up. It's like the bed's on fire at 5:30 in the morning. I walk the dog. I'm totally back to normal. And next thing,
bang,
hit me between the two eyes, like Mike Tyson again, knockout.
Hopefully this time, and I really, really wish you well, Jude, and I'd love to hear from you
and
again.
And same to you. Because people in that depression, it's either trauma or whatever, mental illness or something, they need professionals that they can talk to.
Absolutely.
That have been through it themselves. And I'm sure there's a lot of the medical profession out there, psychologists and whatever, that they've gone through it. And if you meet one of them, it's brilliant because they understand and they can treat you. It's like someone with a broken leg in a crutch. And you could travel around for 5 years and not see. If you end up with a broken leg yourself and you walk through the city, you'll see 10, 20, 30 people on crutches. But because you're on it yourself.
But when you have mental health problems, you don't see anybody else with it because everybody else, and we see that on social media, pretends they have a wonderful life. But in the back of their minds, there's probably something terribly going wrong. Jude, again, it was wonderful talking to you, and I hope we talk to you again soon.
Put me on the air any time. But I can walk through Galway City and I can pick out the people that are sick, actually. I can see it in them. I can see that dark.
Yeah, you can see it in their eyes.
Look at God bless.
God bless. And you too, Jude. All right, take care of yourself. And I hope this time is the time that you will turn your life around. I think you might. I have a funny feeling this is the time you're going to turn your life back around and do something that you really enjoy. Thanks, Jude.
Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hit.